I'm delighted now to welcome to the program Maggie McNabb. She is a designer, educator, and author. Her new book is called Design by Nature, Using Universal Forms and Principles in Design. And she's going to be at Collected Works Bookstore tomorrow, Friday the 13th of January at 6 in the evening. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much, Mary Charlotte. It's a pleasure to be here.
So this is a book, I mean, I guess it's for designers and students of design and so on, and I'm certainly not that, but I found it absolutely fascinating and quite useful because it helps you to understand, helps anybody to understand the visual world in terms of nature. You growing up here in New Mexico, nature was really your starting point, and for you, art is really grounded in natural forms.
Yes, exactly. I was also really fortunate in the fact that I had a father and both parents who were very involved in nature, interested in nature, and who both happened to be teachers. So my father was an architect for John Gaumin, and he taught me basic universal principles and took me, he taught me through doing. It wasn't like sitting in a classroom, and I think children are very experientially oriented, and that's really, really important. And I find it with my students too, because I typically teach people in their late teens, early 20s, and hands-on is just absolutely essential to understand. And what better to be hands-on with than the world that surrounds you, because we're so compartmentalized away from it, and yet you can't separate yourself from nature. We are nature, and we start to really wreak havoc when we begin to do that, as we're experiencing now in the modern world.
There are elements of nature that you talk about in the book, and I mean everything from motion to shapes and symmetries and some of the forms found in nature. There are also ideas of economy and simplicity, and nature teaches us those, I suppose, through the process of evolution, in which the simplest and most efficient design was the most likely to survive.
Exactly, yeah. And what I've found are the common principles in design are elegance, balance, and meaning, because we're human beings that we're storytellers. We always have been storytellers, because consciousness is so much a piece of what it is to be human. It's very, very important that we're able to create relationships, understand relationships, and then recreate those relationships. And when you base those relationships on things that have worked for millennia in nature, you know you're working with sound principles that are universal. So they translate anywhere, any culture, any era, any time. And they're very, very workable, and they're also common to all design disciplines. I mean, I always say that the first profession is not what we've been told. The oldest profession is design. It's what human beings do, because we have consciousness to think of things that don't exist right in this moment, but we're able to be inspired and create and then find a way to put a result into the world that actually demonstrates the idea and makes it real. So that can be anything from designed communications that get across a concept to a building you walk into, to a satellite we send out into outer space. So design is the fundamental ability that all human beings have.
Looking at your book, and it's very richly illustrated with designs, both from wonderful designers and from art and from nature and from all different colors, all different cultures, I felt so often looking at these pictures a kind of joy inside of myself and a sense of beauty and mystery. What is the relationship between nature, beauty, and that kind of happiness that you must also feel when you're, for example, choosing things for this book?
Well, you know, I think I have a passion for creative problem solving, which my background was always to draw. I learned that from my father. He was always an artist and passed that on to me. But I really wanted to create something beyond or besides personal art for myself. I wanted to create things that actually solved problems for people. And being creative with that is how I found to do it, and nature is just the place where I've been able to source figuring out on my own because I wasn't formally educated in a lot of higher learning institutions. I had a father who taught me. I had hands-on experience. I've traveled a lot. I started my business when I was 25, 30 years ago. So it's just something I have learned by doing. And so this is something that I try and put my students in whenever I'm in a situation of doing workshops or teaching classes to have people do it hands-on with me.
You talk about the creative process, and part of the creative process is letting go and going to a way of thinking or a way of solving problems that is, I can't control this problem, which seems
right.
Almost like a paradox.
It is. It's counterintuitive, and it's exactly what we're not taught in today or trained in today's culture. But being aware of your intuitive knowledge, which we come into the world fully formed. We come into the world with everything we need. All we have to do is unfold to the experience that occurs around us through the process of living. And to not understand the value or really honor the value of what it is to have spontaneity, to intuitively pursue things that feel correct for you instead of staying within the boundaries that we're told are the correct boundaries for us, I think is one of the issues we're dealing with right now. We have a lot of unhappy people that are doing things that are really not the right fit for them. My sense and what I did with my kids was when they showed an interest in something, I did what I could to support that because it was just their own spirit unfolding into the world in a physical reality and finding a way to match up what they've come into the world with and be able to contribute to it by letting it unfold in a way that it should happen. So that's what I try to get across in this book, is, and that's why there's exercises in this book, so that people can do some things hands-on and they can gravitate to the things that speak to them. There's a reason our soul tells us when something is right, when it feels right. It is right. I mean, it's so clear. And when you look at some of the shapes in nature, some of the patterns in nature, it's very clear what the energy is doing. For instance, the branching pattern in a tree, that's one of the most common patterns in the universe and in the world in particular. And we see it typically in plants, but it's also in river tributaries. It's in our nervous system. And it is energy moving from one place to another place with distribution points. It looks exactly like what it does. And when you really pay attention to what's around you and you're able to see some of the simplest stuff that I think we miss it because it's so obvious. It's like that thing of not being conscious of breathing. We do it in, out every moment of our lives, but we're not aware of it because it's just a part of processing the world and being part of the world. Well, interpreting everything around us through our senses is also that kind of situation. So what this book is teaching is how to pay attention to these subtleties. There's so much richness in subtlety and so much richness in being able to be spontaneous. That's when creativity can really shine through. And yes, it's unexpected and you don't know what you're going to get, but there are so many gems that come out of that rather than trying to manage what the end result is. And, you know, it's this is a style that's appropriate for doing certain things. You know, I'm not going to recommend you do this in every situation in your life, obviously. But when you're doing something that's creative, these are sound approaches to doing it with. Trust your intuition. Allow yourself to be spontaneous. I have an exercise in the book where you focus on one particular sense when you go out in nature, and you design around that sense alone as much as possible. So it's not just sight. It's also hearing. It's also the way the air feels on your skin. It's you focus on those things and then you find a way to express that. However it fits for you to express that. There's no right or wrong way to do it, you know.
We're talking to Maggie McNabb about her book, Designed by Nature. You talked about the branching pattern in your book. You also talk about the meandering pattern, which is the way that rivers flow and which is the way that people walk. And what's so interesting about, I mean, we are nature, we perceive nature. I would make a case that nature is more beautiful than anything that people can possibly create, and yet we see it better when people represent it and when people make art out of it. And I never thought about the meandering pattern as a form of art until you said that in your book, and there's so many insights like that.
Yeah. I think when we create a design or a piece of artwork or something that is human-generated, it's focusing on a specific piece, and maybe it helps clarify a relationship better in the way the artist or the designer perceives it, that makes it clear to others. And this is one of the things that we really love about art and we love about good design, is it's bringing those invisible relationships to the forefront, so they become more tangible to us. They become more tactile. They're experiential at that point, and they're not just happening in the subconscious. I mean, I say if you've got consciousness, you know, go ahead and use it. Find a way to pull up that stuff that's down in there and bring it up here and then use it in the world.
Toward the beginning of the book, you compare something called wabi-sabi with grunge. What are those two aesthetics? What are those two sets of meanings and how they're expressed?
Well, wabi-sabi is an Asian aesthetic, specifically from Japan, that is an acknowledgement of the beauty in things just as they are. If they're in an unfinished state, if they're in a state of deterioration, if they're in a state of chaos, it's an appreciation that everything that occurs in the world is involved in whatever its process is in the moment, and it's worthwhile because it is a piece of the overall process. So that's a very Asian aesthetic. It's an Eastern sensibility that people don't typically have in Western culture, although with the internet now, things are changing because there's so much merging of cultural tastes and health. I mean, you know, the analogy I have of the world is like the two hemispheres of the brain. You've got the left side of the brain that is more linearly connected, that does more processing, that is involved with problem solving on a very sequential kind of a level. And then you've got the right side of the brain that I make analogous to the Eastern hemisphere of the world, that is more of a spontaneous kind of an unfolding as it does, that's not managed, it's appreciated for what it is. And, you know, it's not that one is better than the other, or one is works any more efficiently than the other. They're both used together. They should be used together.
I was going to say, they can't live without each other.
That's right. I mean, we need both sides of our brain. And the more Western approach with grunge is, it's more of a reactive response to things not working very well in certain ways. So the punk response, the surfer response, the grunge response to things has come about by being reactive instead of just being in the presence of something as it is. So it's very much following along the line of Western culture's sort of sequential responsiveness, reactive responsiveness. And it fits perfectly with who we are in this culture.
So you're a designer, and people come to you with a problem. Like they need a logo, or they need a design, or they need to represent themselves in some way. Mm-hmm. And so they are perhaps coming from a business perspective, and yet you're grounded in nature. So I'm looking at your book, and you're thinking about spirals and squares and the dynamics of nature and waves and things like that. And then you're looking at somebody who's got a startup business and they need a logo. I mean, how do you bring together this person and their need with this kind of depth of beauty and nature and design that you're bringing to them?
Yeah. Well, the thing about nature is it is the universal language. We all speak it, we all know it, and we're all fluent in it, even though we're not all completely comfortable with saying we understand it that well. But we intuitively know it. We have to exist in this plane. You know, we are nature. It comes from the inside out in us. You know, every embryo on that point starts as a point, as a seed, as an egg, and unfurls in a spiral motion. This is moving from the inside out, and every creature in the world does it. But in the case of my own clients, I mean, I'm in the business of communicating. So what would make better sense than using a language that everyone universally speaks? And particularly in the global world that we're in right now, with so many people on the internet, with people from who knows what countries visiting, you don't want your design to be culturally specific. I mean, unless you're just narrowing it purposefully that way. I mean, most clients of mine would want to have a universal perception. And it, for me, started intuitively as a designer. I didn't plan to have this whole nature perspective, but what happened was early on in my work in 1983, I won the first place award from the American Advertising Federation for logo design in the United States. This is way before the internet. I was a little, small, young designer in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I had a design that went all the way to the top in the United States, beyond all of the big ad agencies at that time. And I just continued to have logos that would resonate that way with people. And UNM at one point began to ask me to teach, so I began teaching there in the mid-90s. And the teaching process is what taught me what it was I was doing. It, you know,
so good, you were just doing it.
Good designers do this intuitively, and all humans do it intuitively. So I really learned more specifically. You know, I started off on the right foot with having this kind of introduction to nature from a really young age, but not in specifics like, well, the spiral is doing this kind of energy, or the circle represents this in all cultures. You know, that kind of thing came later, and it came through my love of science. I mean, my dad got me onto microscopes when I was a little kid, 8 or 9 years old, and I began to see these self-similar scaling. Here we are in, you know, a city that's got the Santa Fe Institute and a lot of really fascinating theoretical physicists, and my dad read me science fiction when I was a kid for bedtime stories, you know, so I was just introduced to these things, and to me it was just a love of finding out more about this stuff. I knew I wanted to do this for my life, for my work. I mean, I love painting and I love drawing, but this idea of kind of tying it all together and working with a client and actually helping them realize something that expresses them in a way that's accurate and aesthetic and efficient and does all the things that good design should do is just, it's a very satisfying profession to be in. And so I find the things in the client that would relate universally, but I still need to put in, I always put in something that's quite specific to them. So, for instance, the Arabian horse logo, you may have noticed the two, the yin-yang horses, I call them.
Yeah.
There's an empty horse and a filled horse, a positive and a negative horse, and they loop around their heads and their necks, arch around each other, and one creates the other. You know, it's like two sides of a coin. The edge has got to be there to create the two. So you've got two opposites as complements. This is what I tell my students, too. Opposites are not in contention with one another. Opposites create one another.
Right.
They're actually complements. And we have a tendency of black and white thinking in our culture. So we have this tendency to think of opposites as some sort of a conflicted situation, but it's actually not that at all. It's actually a representational situation that allows you to clearly see each. And so I use this aspect of the two horse heads for an Arabian horse farm, and because of the shape of the circle, I brought in all of these aspects of that particular breed. You know, the fact that they have very delicate bone structure, a dished face, and an arched neck, and it worked perfectly to have them fit that way.
And when the client says, yes, that's who I am, then you know you've done it right.
Right. And I usually know before I go in to see the client. And I typically give at least a few different directions, but I almost always know which one it is. And sometimes without doubt know which one it is. You know, oftentimes know which one it is without doubt. The paw print with the Band-Aid for the vet. It's like, you mean someone hasn't done this yet? That was the one that won first place in the United States in 1983. And
right.
I couldn't believe that someone hadn't hit on that fable of Androcles and the lion. And by putting a Band-Aid on the paw, I mean, it's a universal thing that people in any country, any culture would understand that if they saw that hanging on someone's shingle, they'd have a very good idea of what that person did. You know, no language, no written language necessary.
Well, there's much more to talk about, but this issue of simplicity is something, I mean, that interaction, again, they're not opposites. Simplicity and complexity in nature, mm-hmm. they're kind of like two sides of the same coin.
Right, and they're both necessary. I mean, I guess you would say that complexity is connected with chaos and things not being organized, and perhaps there being some things there that are unnecessary, but it's going through, elegance is going through that process of refinement that strips away the stuff that may not be needed in that moment. That's not that that stuff may not be needed later on or at another time, but right for that particular function of how it's being used, it's not necessary. And that's kind of the process I go through in the logo design of what can I strip away here? What is superfluous? What can be thrown out? And how do I create the most elegant, minimalist piece of design that still communicates? You know, Einstein said, be simple, but don't be too simple. So that's what you want to strive for in good design.
Maggie McNabb is a designer, educator, and author. Her new book is called Design by Nature, Using Universal Forms and Principles in Design, and she will be at Collected Works Bookstore tomorrow, the 13th of January, at 6 in the evening. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe. What's your website?
The book's website is designbynaturebook.com.
Thanks again.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.